This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. In an age where digital transformation shapes every facet of commerce, the dynamics between e-marketplaces and social commerce platforms are crucial. As Malaysia navigates this digital landscape, the need for a balanced digital economy arises, one that benefits all stakeholders from local merchants and consumers to the broader national economy. Now, apart from e-commerce platforms, social media channels have now become platforms that influencers and brands, especially in the beauty and fashion industries, have come to rely on to showcase products, find customers and, well, make sales. But the question here that seems to be coming about, especially with the recent situation with TikTok over in the US, is not just how do we regulate social commerce, but how do we safeguard the quality of products and fair pricing on e-commerce platforms? How do we protect consumers? How do we protect the data, merchants, and regulate platforms? The rise of these foreign-owned e-marketplaces does pose a challenge to Malaysia's digital sovereignty, which is a key issue that's coming up across the world, such as how we can control, how we can establish a local control over consumer data, fair practices, and fair pricing. And while big companies may have a bit more leverage here to work with this, smaller business owners may not. Today we speak with Ganesh Kumar Banga. He is the chair of the PCOM's e-commerce chapter. He's also the founder and executive chairman of Commerce.Asia, an all-in-one e-commerce ecosystem. We're going to get into a lot of things, including fair practices in the e-commerce space. If you have any thoughts, you can WhatsApp us on our U-Mobile number. That's 018-789-8899. Once again, that's 018-789-8899. Ganesh, welcome to the show. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Now, Ganesh, this obviously was kicked off by a piece you wrote, I think it was last week, about fair practices in e-commerce and social commerce. And I think that was inspired by the situation with TikTok over in the US. Talk to us a little bit about how you're looking at the state of e-commerce and social commerce practices. Why is this a concern that you're looking into?
Sure. So I think, first of all, let's talk a bit about the growth of e-commerce and how that's transitioned into social commerce over the last year and a half, right? So e-commerce really grew during the pandemic. If you all remember, we all started buying on Lazada and Shopee and buying almost everything on
there,
right?
Definitely became mainstream.
Yes. So it really became mainstream during the pandemic. And one of the trends that also picked up during the pandemic, if you remember, was actually live commerce, where people buy from Facebook, right? All people right. were selling fish and whatnot.
You see these live streams
on
and
Facebook.
Stuff.
Mm. Yeah, so people buying seafood on Facebook during during the pandemic. That was really the start of social commerce in Malaysia. Post that age, when things kind of opened up, live on Facebook kind of reduced. But that's also the time that TikTok actually came in our market and rolled TikTok Shop, which is really TikTok's marketplace, right? And TikTok's marketplace really is one of the biggest innovations to hit e-commerce since eBay or Amazon was created more than 30 years ago, right? Why is that? It's because it actually puts that whole e-commerce buying experience on social media. Facebook has it, but Facebook's is not as integrated. When I say as integrated, it means integrated into payment, into logistics, into delivery. And one of the features that TikTok Shop has, it even links it to creators or influencers, basically. So influencers can create videos to sell products for brands and earn a cut from the sales of the products. And TikTok has really grown. TikTok Shop has really grown over the last 1.5 years. Data or statistics that I've been made known, actually, there are 200,000 influencers in Malaysia alone that generate 1,000 to 1,500 ringgit a month.
Wow.
From an income basically from TikTok Shop, right? So that's really an amazing amount of growth in just a very short span of time.
Yeah, I mean, it really does feel like TikTok Shop came out of nowhere over the last year or so. Because earlier on, it was like your Shopee's and your Lazada's that were trying to tap into live streaming and using that to sell products or help merchants sell products. And TikTok Shop has really taken the space by storm.
I think the biggest difference between TikTok and Shopee is the fact that the social media is integrated into
embedded,
it.
Right?
It's embedded. So if you go to Shopee today, you already have in your mind what you want to buy. For example, if you want to buy a bed sheet, you'd already go to Shopee and search for Acme, for example, right? One of the local bed sheet suppliers, right? But when you go on TikTok, it's a bit different. When you go on TikTok, you may not want to buy something, but you're watching your fellow influencer, you're watching one of your friends do a video, and then the next screen, you'll see somebody trying to sell you a product, or an influencer trying to sell you a product, or an influencer that you like trying to promote a product, right? Won't try say trying to sell you a product, but trying to promote the product. And then you find it quite interesting because it's really word of mouth, really recommendation. And then you choose to buy it, right? And that's really the power of TikTok Shop and how it has grown over the last 1.5 years.
It really does remind me of TV shopping, right?
Yep.
This TV channels that entirely were, I think, was it CJ Wow Shop that was
a
big play here.
Media, yes.
I mean, the media companies like Media Prima and Astro made a lot of money from these channels that were dedicating to just displaying products. But this obviously is different, right? Because it's on the social media platform and it's in your hand. It's so much easier than making a phone call to make a purchase. Which I guess, not just social commerce here, Ganesh. I think the larger point that you're also making in the article is that it's not just about social commerce and fair practices there. It's about e-commerce in general as well, correct?
Yep.
Talk to us a little bit about the underlying thesis here.
Sure. So if you actually look at e-commerce in Malaysia today, there are actually only 2 or 3 large e-commerce marketplaces in Malaysia, and they're all foreign-owned. Right, and the issue is we're now so dominated that the dominance of these few players, actually 1 or 2 players now, is by far bigger than even any local player, right? And because of that, we have become very dependent on these players. These players own our data, these players own our consumer base, right? And we naturally go to these websites to buy products. So because of that, if these players, for example, want to change certain rates or terms, for example, today some of the marketplaces charge 4, 6, 7%, whatever that number is, depending on the product, right?
On the transaction.
On the transaction and the product. So there's a different rate for different product ranges, right? Okay. So for example, if a marketplace is charging 4%, let's say in the future they choose to change that 4% to 8%. Right? And if a merchant is earning a margin of 12%, so from earning from 1/3 of the margin going to a marketplace, today 2/3 goes to the marketplace, right?
That's a big change.
Yes. And for example, if that marketplace then changes another term to reduce the 2 days required to deliver a product to 1 day, then the merchant has to deliver that product faster, right? So this all increases cost to the merchants, and because of that cost, the consumer will be impacted as well. And today, e-commerce is at 20% of our retail, roughly. What happens when it becomes 80%? Do we lose the control over our retail industry? Do we lose our retail sovereignty, right? That could happen. So we really need to take measures to ensure that the retail in our country, especially the digital retail in our country, continues to be managed and controlled by local players.
I guess from a business perspective, this is like your channel concentration risk, right? That you're depending too much on one channel, and now that channel has the leverage to dictate terms to you. Maybe not such of an issue if you're a brick and mortar business that's using online as one part, or you have your own web store.
Yep.
But if you're a business, a small business owner that used Lazada or Shopee to start your business, right? You're entirely based on a platform. These things can really impact your business.
Exactly. If you remember many years ago, if you were to open, if Carrefour were to open in Malaysia, they actually require local players to actually own a stake, own a majority stake, or at least a significant stake in those retail distribution players, right? Those laws don't exist in the online world, rightly. Right, but therein lies the problem, right? It's the fact that today foreign-owned players really own, control this distribution channel.
Now, Ganesh, some may look at this and say, hey, but you know, Facebook and Google, right? These are also two players that, you know, they're not local, but they have so much of our data. Why is this a concern here for e-commerce in particular, or that that two players or three players are have all this, I think the word used was retail sovereignty.
Yeah. So I think the reason is because of that retail, our reliance on them for retail, right? We have less of a reliance on Google, for example. So we use Google for search. And yes, they have our data. Facebook has our data. But if tomorrow we choose not to use Facebook or Google, we're still okay. But retailers today can't afford to not be on Lazada. They can't afford to not be on Shopee. And soon they may not be able to afford to not be on TikTok, right?
Yeah. I guess I guess if we're looking from an advertising perspective, you know, some may say that, you know, I can't afford not to be on Google, not to be on Facebook, but instead of, that's probably lessons that we should be taking from that, right? That the advertising market has been so changed that maybe we don't want that same thing to happen to our
But
sector.
You know, when it comes to advertising on Facebook, there are alternate channels, right? You can use influencers, for example.
Understood.
Right? So there are alternate channels for you to reach the audience on that platform, right? But for marketplace, there isn't. That's the only channel. They control the payment. They control the logistics, right?
Yeah. And I we'll get into some of those points later in a bit, Ganesh, but first we got to go into a few messages. Folks, this is Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. And today I'm speaking with Kanish Kumar Banga. He's the chair of the PCOM e-commerce chapter. He's also the founder and executive chairman of Commerce.Asia. And today we've been talking about fair practices that are needed for e-commerce and social commerce. I'm Roshan Gunnison. We'll be back in just a bit. So keep it here at BFM 89.9, the business station.
Breakfast for Masters, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, I'm Roshan Karnasin, and this is Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. And today, given the rise of e-commerce and social commerce platforms around the world and their importance in commerce and retail, today we're discussing fair practices in e-commerce and social commerce with Ganesh Kumar Banga. He's the chair of the PCOM e-commerce chapter. He's also the executive chairman and founder of Commerce.Asia, an all-in-one e-commerce ecosystem. Ganesh, to kick off this part of the conversation, talk to us, before we get into some of the solutions here, talk to us about the nature of the relationship now between merchants and platforms today. Because it's been a few good years, I guess, that but now that platforms need to kind of hit profitability, I'm guessing some levers are being pulled here.
Yeah, so actually a lot of platforms today are looking at, and you're absolutely right, they're looking at being profitable today. So in the last couple of years, maybe they were funded by investors and now they need to immediately turn around and being to be profitable. So some of the levers they're pulling are levers, for example, to increase the margins that they're charging to the merchants, right? And then when you do that, of course, the issue is then consumers may not buy online. So they may, because of that, they may actually choose to then reduce the number of days, for example, for delivery from 2 to 1 day, for example, right? Which is fine, which helps consumers actually. But in no way should they be doing that overnight. It should be done over time, whether it's giving time of 3 to 6 months and over stages, right? Going for 4 to 8% may be a bit too much to do immediately.
A bit aggressive.
Right? But doesn't mean you can't go to 4 to 5 to 6, right? So they really need to kind of also look at it from a perspective of the country, from the national perspective, from a consumer perspective and from a merchant perspective, right?
So the key here is, I guess, that power dynamic at play here. So now with all these foreign-owned platforms, like Lazada, like Shopee, dominating the e-marketplace. What do you think we should be doing as a player yourself in the industry, working with multiple merchants on your own platforms and kind of having a sense for their concerns as well? What steps should we be taking here to rebalance the dynamics?
Sure, I think there are two steps. One is the merchants, what actions that can be taken by the merchants themselves. The second is actions that can be taken by by the merchants and also by the country itself, right? By the government. What can the government do to ensure that our retail sovereignty is maintained? I think, and if you look at on the merchant's perspective, is we need to reduce reliance on any single channel. So simply, if you have Lazada, you need to have Shopee, you need to have TikTok shop, right? And you need to have multiple channels. Your TikTok shop, you should also try to see how to sell on Facebook. And have your own channel as well. I always give this analogy. Having your own web store or brand.com, as they call it, right? Your own .com where people can go and buy products from you is like having your own shop house. Mm-hmm. Having a store in Lazada or Shopee is like having a store in a mall.
That's a great analogy, actually. Yeah.
If the mall actually increases tomorrow, their rental pricing that you mm-hmm. can't control, then you can always get your consumers to go to your web store, mm-hmm. right? And how you need to do that is you need to know your customer, mm-hmm. right? So implementing your own loyalty program or working together with loyalty program providers that kind of help you get to the consumer and get consumers to your web store is something that we really need to do. And that's what actually Commerce Asia actually focuses on as well, right?
Now, knowing your customer as a part on the merchant side of things, very important. Loyalty programs can be very important when you have your, when you control the channel. Yes. When you are operating on marketplaces, I presume that you don't know your customer as well as you'd like to.
Exactly, yeah. You don't know your consumer at all most mm-hmm. of the time.
I guess that's right? the secret sauce that they're trying to sell you, right?
Yes,
these are our users.
Exactly.
We'll just tell you how much money you make.
And, yes.
We'll know the customer.
Exactly. So from day one, actually, from when I first started getting into e-commerce in 2017, 2018, I always told merchants, you need to have your own web store, right? But of course, the sales on a web store versus a marketplace at that time, the sales on the web store was minuscule compared to the marketplace because marketplace were basically giving discounts and subsidizing shipping and whatnot, right?
It's the equivalent of footfall in a mall as well, right?
Exactly, yeah. But today, and so merchants were kind of ignoring the fact of owning their own channel and just were dependent on these marketplaces. Mm-hmm. But today they're starting to see, right? They're starting to see that, hey, I need to own my own channel because if not, my margins will be compressed, right? And that's where it's very important for them to have a proper omni-channel strategy, to have a know your customer strategy that incorporates know your customer, right? To ensure that you're not too dependent on any particular channel.
What does a proper omni-channel strategy look like, Ganesh?
So you have a single inventory that kind of lists the product on multiple marketplaces, and you have your own web store, and you also sell on different social media channels, whether Facebook and TikTok. Mm-hmm. So with that, you wouldn't be too dependent on any particular marketplace. Mm-hmm. And if any particular channel, or as these channels increase their rates, then you can always...
You're diversifying your risk there. And I find this analogy very relatable to even the social media world, right? Yep. A lot of influencers are reliant on the algorithms and the platforms. If YouTube changes this particular algorithm, then suddenly your video doesn't do as well. Your AdSense doesn't do as well.
Right.
You don't get the likes, you don't get the clicks, which is why you see so many influencers start newsletters, right? Because email is really the only thing you properly own. And you can start knowing your audience in much more detail.
Exactly.
So that's a key part there. We're also seeing a lot of e-commerce players move away from just being pure play e-commerce and entering the brick and mortar world.
Yep.
And this omni-channel, this digital, right? The physical and digital worlds are starting to collide a lot more.
Yep.
Again, emphasizing that importance of having a diversified channel strategy.
Yeah. So true omni-channel is where you also have retail. So your pure D2C players before actually moving towards retail. Mm-hmm. Companies like Christy Ng, that started as a pure web store, have now started selling in retail as well, right? But it's not just about owning the retail outlet, but it's actually knowing the customer in the retail outlet and having a 360 view of that customer.
I had a conversation with Love Bonito a few months back, and they also, in the last 5 years, have made this switch over from just being purely e-commerce to having big stores now, and you know, keeping people in and how they can innovate on that retail experience. So that's on the merchant side. Is there anything else on the merchant side you'd like to talk about in terms of what they can do to restore their agency, I guess, in terms of how they do their business?
No, I think to summarize what I've just said is having an omni-channel strategy from marketplaces to social commerce to web stores to also having retail and then knowing your customer. And I think really putting more marketing dollars and more discounts and more emphasis on the web stores or brand.coms is something that merchants need to kind of focus on. Yeah, and with that, you know, over time, we will reduce our dependence on the large... marketplaces, I would say. So, you still need them for the customers. It's just like you still need a shop in Mid Valley or or One Utama. But that doesn't mean you don't have your own shop house with lower rental costs, where you can actually get people to go to.
Yeah. So sometimes maybe your marketplace can be a loss leader or something along those lines,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
Diversify the strategy there. So ultimately, merchants need to diversify their channel risks, but also take ownership over their branding and their marketing as well. Yep. Don't rely only on the platforms to do all that work for you, right? Because that's where they kind of say like, oh, but I'm doing this for you and doing that for you.
Yes.
This is why I take this X amount.
Yes.
Now, a big conversation it's also been happening, and this is also because of the TikTok situation, is the data part of all this, right? Mm-hmm. And we touched a little bit on that know your customer kind of situation. Yep. But, you know, the US is being very critical over where data is being stored about US customers, US social media users. Talk to us a little bit about your own particular views on this and why it's important with regards to Malaysia and the retail scene.
Sure. I think if I go back to the fact that today, 90% of our e-commerce industry is, the volume is generated through marketplaces which are foreign owned.
Mm-hmm.
So Malaysia really needs to kind of take control of its sovereignty.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not suggesting we start our own marketplace to compete with them, because I think the ship for that has already sailed. I think it's very difficult today.
Very expensive.
Yeah, very expensive and very difficult, right? Because the time to do that was maybe 6-7 years ago. And the ship has already sailed, right? So today, what we can do, however, and I think the government through MCMC is looking at this ever since the whole issue on the TikTok ban came up in Indonesia, actually, where TikTok banned TikTok shop in Indonesia. And then Malaysia was looking at it as well. However, I don't think it's a good idea to ban TikTok, which is what I said, just simply because of the innovation it is in. It's like, I like to, if the sun is too hot, it's like blocking the sun, right? Mm-hmm. You got to create aircon. You got to create an aircon for your room. You can't block the sun, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we should block TikTok, but we should have the regulatory tools to be able to manage and to manage kind of their business policies, right? For example, their rates and their rates and, for example, some of the terms that they set on the merchants.
Mm-hmm.
So having guidelines for them, I think, would be something that would help, and guidelines that can be formulated with the public and private sector input as well. And that's where PCOM comes in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Indonesia has a regulatory framework for that, and other markets, more developed markets, also have a regulatory framework where OTT players, right? So OTT is over the top. So over the top players here, for example, are marketplaces, social media, they actually leverage on the backbones of telcos. Telcos are regulated, but OTT players like Facebook and TikTok are not regulated, right? So actually the government can't really control what content is actually displayed on TikTok, for example. And this sometimes causes issues, right? And similarly, the government can't control today, for example, the terms and guidelines that the marketplaces impose on merchants in Malaysia, right? So there should be some guidelines to actually kind of manage the terms that these foreign players impose onto our local players. And that's where I think a regulatory framework to actually manage these OTT players will come to play. And it's not something that we're the first country to do it. More developed countries, Indonesia has done it. Other more developed countries have also done it, right? So we need that to ensure that we still have control of our digital sovereignty or retail sovereignty, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same reason why the government controls telco players or regulates telco players, right? So if you regulate telco players and you go one step up, it's actually the OTT players, at least large OTT players, should we also find ways to kind of regulate or provide guidelines to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, we have e-wallets that have guidelines today.
Mm-hmm.
So if e-wallets have guidelines, telcos have guidelines, shouldn't marketplaces have such guidelines?
Yeah, and I guess that's also to ultimately
Protect the consumer.
Protect the consumer.
Yes.
Also protect the businesses.
Yes.
Right? Because right now, who do they go to if there are quote-unquote unfair practices being taken, being done?
Yes.
If there is a place for them to go that's maybe not clear, and also dealing with these non-local entities requires a bit of work as well, right? So having those guidelines, whether it is, I mean, a lot of countries are just saying, just keep the data in the country for starts, right? That's why we're all these data centers are being built across the world in particular countries as well.
But how do you do that, right? Yeah. How do you tell these players, keep the data in your country?
So that's why I'm going to ask you.
you can't if you do, unless you have the regulatory framework to do so. But I don't think the issue is as much where the data is being stored, because it's a borderless world today. Mm-hmm. I think the issue is really how the data is being used.
Okay, please elaborate.
How is the data being used, for example, to influence the minds of consumers?
Okay.
How is that data being used to influence the minds of the rakyat? It's not about where the data is stored, but really how that data on our citizens, how the data on our local consumers are being used, right?
So very similar again to the social media conversations that are being held, and very importantly, very related to, I guess TikTok has kind of brought that convergence here, right? Yes. Because they are both social media and commerce, and now also a commerce platform.
Look, these issues have always been there. It's just that Indonesia banning TikTok Shop and now US banning TikTok has kind of brought that issue up to the surface, right? But that issue and that problem where our data has been controlled by these foreign-owned players or these large players, the big boys, so to speak, right, has always been there. The question is today, because the larger countries are actually looking at ways to kind of regulate or control that, we are now saying, should we do the same or not? Mm-hmm. And all I'm suggesting is, all we are suggesting is, I would say, is that we need guidelines to ensure that our data is not being used for the wrong purposes that could be damaging to our businesses and our country.
Ganesh, I'd like to elaborate a little bit more on that in a few minutes, as well as talk about the future of e-commerce as well. And what are you seeing this year?
Sure.
Folks, this is Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. And today we've been talking about e-commerce and social commerce and what fair practices for these platforms looks like. And helping me with this conversation has been Ganesh Kumar Banga. He is the chair of the Peacock e-commerce chapter. I'm Roshan Gunnison. We'll be back in just a bit, so keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Breaking financial matters, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, I'm Roshan Gunnison, and this is Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. And today we're discussing e-commerce and social commerce and the need for fair practices, or at least to evaluate what fair practices look like for these players and platforms, with Ganesh Kumar Banga. He is the chair of the Peacom e-commerce chapter, but he's also the founder and executive chairman of e-commerce.asia, and e-commerce, and all-in-one e-commerce ecosystem. Ganesh, a lot of this comes down to the need for, yes, businesses need to de-risk their channel strategies so that you're not entirely bound by TikTok Shop or Lazada or Shopee or whatever platform you're using, having your own store. So that's the channel strategy.
Yep.
But the other point we've really emphasized in this conversation as well is that data sovereignty of it, right? That what are all these platforms are foreign-owned.
Sure.
I mean, a lot of platforms are foreign-owned, that's one thing. But this kind of data and customer data is really down to where money is going and being spent, right? Which can be, it's a parallel conversation to the concerns that governments are having over social media and the user data on that side. So maybe to kind of elaborate further, what you're seeing here, or the risks here, talk to us about the difference between something like TikTok Shop and the players that we're also familiar with, like Shopee and Lazada. What the difference between social commerce and traditional e-commerce?
So I'll talk about it, but I just want to also touch on the point you brought on, the issues with social media.
Yeah.
So the issues that uncontrolled social media will lead to is really political issues.
Yes.
The issues that uncontrolled marketplace will lead to, or uncontrolled marketplace will lead to, is actually economic issues. So one is a political, one cause political issues, the other cause economic issues. And both are equally as important for us, for the government to look at and to manage.
Okay. Right?
And then the second part of your question was really the social commerce and e-commerce. What's the difference between Lazada and TikTok Shop, for example? Or even Facebook Live Commerce, for example? The biggest difference is one is push and one is pull. So when it comes to Facebook Live or TikTok Shop, the products are pushed to you. You kind of watch the product, and if you like it, you buy it. It's pushed to you, right? You may not want to buy a product, but because you're watching it, that the influencer that's selling it to you sells it so well, right? It's like walking through a pasar malam with somebody selling you something that you don't need, and then you buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Where else, when it comes to the marketplace, you already have an intent.
Mm.
You may already want to buy something. So because of that, you go to a mall or a retail shop, right? Or shop house to buy it. You know that you want to buy the product. You know that's where you can get the product, and you go there to buy it. And that's the biggest difference.
Mm.
So it will not eat each other. TikTok Shop may not completely, for example, overpower Shopee, right? But there'll be users that want to buy something intent-based, that they have intent to buy something, they go to a Shopee. And then users who don't want to buy something but basically spend their time watching TikTok will get pushed or will get convinced, right? To actually buy a product.
So the difference is kind of like, again, with the e-commerce players, the market players, going to a mall.
Yes.
And then you're kind of looking around, you're window shopping, that sort of thing.
Yes.
But with the TikTok shops and the social commerce, it's kind of like agents coming to your house to sell you or meeting you to sell you a particular financial product or something along those lines.
Right.
There is a human agent involved that's kind of talking you through the product. Obviously, this one is a bit more.
Yeah, I would say the mall focused, is right? somewhere in the middle.
Mm.
So, for example, if you want to buy a bed sheet, you would go and you know there's a Acme shop in a Taman Tun, for example, right? You would then go to that shop the retail shop and buy the product because you know it's there, you go and buy it. That's what marketplaces are today, right? And then if you're not intending to buy something, you're getting, and you go to a mall, it's like going to a TikTok shop. You have no intention to buy anything, but you walk in there for the aircon or to eat something, right? And then you happen to see a product that you like and that somebody convinces you to buy and you buy a product.
Yeah, that I'm a bit familiar with that. Go to any mall, walk by a Muji or Uniqlo, I may end up coming up with some bags after that.
Yes.
Now, Ganesh, is there anything else you'd like to talk about with regards to this part, the social commerce, e-commerce marketplace situation? Because otherwise, I'd also like to pick your brain a little bit on where you see digital commerce going over the next year or so.
No, I think we've covered the social commerce and e-commerce difference. Mm-hmm.
Actually, I forgot to ask you about what Picom is working on here. Like, are there any conversations with the government on this?
Yep.
What can you tell us?
Yeah, so yes, we are in conversations with the government. Of course, when the TikTok shop issue came about, there was a big matter where we actually have, you know, enablers within our membership. We have marketplaces within our membership. We have logistic players within our membership. And we were really concerned that if TikTok shop actually is banned, which was something that was discussed about a few months ago, that it would really impact the state of our industry today and also impact the future of e-commerce in Malaysia. So we basically asked our members their opinion and we voiced that opinion to the government. And thankfully, they listened to us. They didn't ban TikTok. But of course, we did say that there need to be more support for local players.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been communicated to TikTok. And that's something I believe that the government and TikTok with other local players is looking at as well, right? So that's something that's ongoing. But with that momentum, and I think that basically started when Indonesia was banning TikTok shop. And then now with US banning TikTok, that conversation has come up again. And I think it's aimed for us to really bring these discussions up because we are in a state that if we don't bring these discussions up today, our digital sovereignty, as I mentioned earlier, our retail sovereignty could be in jeopardy.
Mm.
So we really need to make sure that the guidelines and the regulations are in place to ensure that our country is able to manage the situation as e-commerce really grows in the country.
Ganesh, as we come to the close in this conversation, looking ahead, talk to us about some of the biggest opportunities and challenges that you see as a player in the e-commerce space for innovation and growth within Malaysia's e-commerce e-commerce market in the next year or so.
Sure. So I think social commerce is a huge opportunity. And why I say social commerce is a huge opportunity, especially TikTok Shop, and is because TikTok Shop as a marketplace is one where you don't need to have a very strong brand to be successful, right? If you're on a marketplace because it's intent-based, people need to know your brand for them to search you on a Shopee or Lazada, right? So with that, the bigger brands will always have dominance over the smaller players, right? But including the non-e-commerce brands, right? That have not had a strong following on Lazada or Shopee, when they set up a shop on Lazada or Shopee, they'll be successful as well because they already have brand presence among the minds of consumers, provided they have the right player to kind of manage the stores and they kind of optimize their sales funnel well. And then on the other aspect, which is what actually my business, Commerce Asia, focuses on, helping the retail players, the old retail players, actually succeed in promoting brands on the marketplaces. When you go to social commerce, it's a bit different because you don't, a new player can come in, and as long as they create a lot of content, they can actually succeed to have even more sales than a large brand. So this really flattens the playing field for SMEs to really compete against big brands and generate a substantial amount of sales on these social commerce marketplaces, right? And therein, I believe, lies the opportunity.
So social commerce, TikTok Shop is a huge opportunity, whatever said and done, but ultimately don't be dependent on it for your future of your business.
Yes.
And I think that's a great example of, like, you know, any one of your products can suddenly become a huge hit. And if you do that, then maybe you can leverage that to build a brand for yourself and acquire some of that funnel for yourself, right?
Yes.
Use it as a marketing platform as opposed to being a pure play business platform.
You know, the top-selling drink brand on TikTok Shop is not Dutch Lady. The top-selling drink brand on TikTok Shop is Bentong Ginger.
Wow.
Right? Which had a good influencer that knows how to sell these products and actually sold it well. And they're the most successful drink brand because they had a network of influencers that sold to them. Their founder itself, or the guy who was creating this brand on TikTok Shop, was really very passionate, right? And so therein lies the power for SMEs. So it really gives the power of generating a substantial amount of sales to SMEs as well.
Utilizing that content, tying it up with commerce, and really creating a viral product out there. So again, the moral of today's story is social commerce, TikTok Shop, very, very, very powerful opportunities for business. Just don't become dependent on it.
Yep.
Ganesh, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Till next time.
Thank you.
Folks, I've been speaking with Ganesh Kumar Panga. He is the chair of the PCOM e-commerce chapter. He's also the founder and the executive chairman of Commerce.Asia, an all-in-one e-commerce ecosystem. And this has been Enterprise Explore, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. And if you missed any part of this conversation, you can catch the podcast on the BFM app or wherever you get your podcasts. Our podcasts are also available on BFM.my. Just look for Enterprise Explores. I'm Roshan Gunnison. Keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.